Welcome everyone back to the latest instalment, the start of season two of the Nabuna Business Finance Sustainability Podcast. We start the day today, I'll set the scene, in an overcast and empty South Bank Centre. There are some rumbles in the distance, you may hear. It's not a turn in the canteen. There is refurbishment going on, but we have found, Sabrina, Steve and I, a lovely little corner. We're going to be talking about the political influence, the policy influence on small businesses taking a conviction stance on sustainability. And I'm joined by our special guest, Steve Wardlaw, who is a... Well, introduce yourself, Steve. You're a kind of political expert, but also a small business yourself.
That's right. So there's sort of the small business side, which is running a small insurance company focused on the LGBT plus community and women. And as a side, in probably one of the most intriguing slash academic hobbies, I write on energy policy and have done some work recently with some of the Labour Party.
That's hobby with a capital H, isn't it?
I'm a bit of a nerd on lots of things.
But you do, I mean, you do, without going into great detail, you do have a long history as a lawyer in the energy field. So it's something you're well versed in.
Yeah, so interesting. It's come to the fore again, funny enough, because prior to insurance, for a quarter of a century, I was an energy lawyer, and some of my first jobs as a wee nipper, probably at the stage of photocopying, was working on initial privatizations and working on the initial regulatory structures in the power and gas sector. So the stuff about Thames Water, all this kind of thing, comes to the fore. But also it's interesting, starting with the big level, how, if at all, which may be a theme for the podcast, how that's going to translate down to small businesses.
You said quarter of a century. Does that make you feel a little old?
Everything makes me feel a little old currently.
Okay, well, one thing that itself is quite old is the health and the outlook and the well-being of small businesses in this country, who are, we forget, the backbone of the economy. The majority of the private sector is employed by a small business. We've noticed from research, just to kick off, Steve, we've noticed from Nabuna Business Finance Research over the last couple of years that although there's a very big focus on big businesses and ESG, and there's also been a lot of attention on greenwashing from big businesses, small businesses are often in a very different place. 40%, only 40% of them have anyone that looks after sustainability, and they're often not part of the COP discussions and things. So as a small business yourself, do you relate to that, on the fact that how is a small business going to do what a big business does to do its stuff on net zero?
Yeah, so let's start with the very basics. Net zero itself, to be frank, is a fairly nebulous concept. Okay. You know, as a lawyer by heart and by training, you think, someone says, we want to do net zero. I'm like, what does that actually mean? Okay. What's the input? What's the output? If you are a big business, you know, we say, what does that mean? I'll ask my net zero team. And 20 people will rush off and come back with a delightful PowerPoint slide. If there's six of you.
Or deck.
Yeah. But if you're a small business, it's no good. Politicians love a headline. And a good headline is, we're going to change the world. We're going to fix this. Something that can go on the headline of a newspaper if people still read them. With small businesses, I think there's how you attract small businesses into the proposition, how you help them understand what they need to do. They don't have a department that deals with this stuff. There needs to be a lot more, I think, direct action. So when you say sustainability, net zero, 2030, how does this work? You've got to incentivize small businesses, because they'll say, is it good for me? Is it good for me? Bottom line, numbers in, numbers out. It's not good for me because my department will now have something to do in the sustainability team that we have. So it's got to be much more nuts and bolts and actionable as to what the next steps would be.
Okay. And let's turn on to politics now. Nabuna's done a poll of 1,000 small businesses, and it asked them about the various sustainable green policy positions pre-manifesto of the major parties and some of the principalities and some of the minority parties, but didn't label them. It just mixed up the things and asked them what they thought. The first thing... well, you've got some of the data points here. Your thoughts, Steve, on what you see small businesses want, or say they want, from a new government in terms of giving a position on sustainability?
Sure. And again, thinking about small business, sustainable, nice word, appears a lot. Politicians like it. What's it going to mean for people? If you look at small businesses now, for various reasons, they are struggling. and they're struggling with costs. So if you want to sell sustainability to a small company, you know, what are they worried about? Day-to-day running costs and particularly energy costs. If you have a government, says he, treading carefully, that tries to scare people about sustainability and green policies, you know, their view currently is, we're going to have to do it, it's going to be expensive, I'm going to hold it off for as long as possible. That doesn't incentivize anybody to come to the trough and start drinking, yeah. Right? If you turn around and say, actually, these are ways, these are investments to help your business grow, these are investments that will reduce your running costs, these are investments, say, in energy security, that means you won't have the price spike that you have currently, people are going to be interested. But they're going to be interested in a way that the government needs to say, you're not big enough to do this for the greater good. I'm using quote marks there. You need to do this because it's a way to help you be more successful in your profit and loss account. So I think that's right to say the survey showed lots of people are very interested in direct help, say tax relief or some kind of grant system. On a personal level, I'm quite keen on tax relief. I feel that's much more of an incentive to drive people in. And if they don't do it, the government doesn't have to pay out. If they use it badly, the government doesn't have to pay out, unlike a grant system, which is a bit of a blunt tool. So I think that chimes with what your feedback was, that they were looking for some kind of tax incentive for the right green / sustainability measures.
Yeah. What we found last year is there was very much a sort of a seesaw or a 50-50 in how small businesses saw. They knew they had to do things. They knew it was worthy. They could see the benefits. They knew it was important. But for some, it was an investment. It's like a mortgage. Is a mortgage an investment or a debt? For some, investing in new plant equipment or renewable energy or solar panels or whatever, or electric fleet. For some, it was just a cost they would do when they had the luxury of time and surplus. For some, it was something to do because it would make business sense for the future. And I think a lot of small businesses need some help in possibly understanding how something can be an investment and part of their business strategy, rather than a cost you do when you have spare cash, which, let's be honest, most small businesses don't have.
I think that's right. And so if you scare people with additional cost, they're simply going to defer as long as possible. Or if you're running around 23 hours a day, you're not even going to know what the rules are because they really haven't been well promoted. It's clear, though, talking about not a lot of cash, that whatever happens this year, general election-wise, an incoming government is also not going to have a lot of cash to splash around on limitless grants and things like that. Even the Labour Party, you'll see, has cut its targets on, say, home insulation, which is a shame, but understandable in the circumstances. So there may be scope, perhaps, from some of the policy work we are doing, and it's out there, public record, the aim is to try and incentivize the private sector into somehow work with the government / public sector. So grants, not so much, but maybe you say there are subsidized loans, maybe the government acts as a guarantor for the right kind of loan for the right kind of purpose, or offers some discounted scheme where the private sector co-funds, something like that, I expect would be a much cleverer way of trying to get small business involved. If you say, are you going to meet the latest regulations in 2 years? They'll look at you blankly. If you say, would you like some cheap money? They're usually going to be much more interested. And if you can attract them for cheap money, and the fact is it allows them to become more sustainable, and then they see the benefits themselves of that investment, that's kind of the virtuous circle we're looking for.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We're in conversation with Steve Wardlaw. We're talking about small businesses and sustainability for the Navuna Business Finance Podcast. We're going to take a break, then we'll be back for part two. Right, we're back for part two. It's season two, episode one of the Navuna Business Finance Sustainability Podcast. I'm Guy B. I'm your guest host for this season, following the first steps of Sally for part one. Just to recap, we're in a lovely, iconic London location, the South Bank Centre, beacon of the arts in London. We plan to come here to have a quiet chat one Friday morning over a cappuccino, but they've got the refurbishment party going. But we think the ambience is good because that means they're growing, they're investing, they're doing enterprise, and this whole podcast is about business and growth and investing in the future. So there's a kind of intangible link there, but it's real. We're out and about with guests. We're back with Steve Wardlaw. Now, Steve, we spoke before the break about definitions of sustainability and what people may want from a new government. This is possibly a little more controversial, but I think a really important point. One thing we found last year when the government made a reported U-turn, and to balance it, there have been reported U-turns by another party this year. So let's just say changes of stance. Whilst that can be tackled by commentators and the press as a good or a bad thing, the thing that we found for Navuna by asking small businesses is a lot of them kind of thought, if they don't take it seriously like we think they do, because for us, we don't have a head of sustainability, it's kind of an option, maybe we won't take it so seriously. And it was quite a big impact that, you know, small businesses don't have heads of sustainability, a lot of them, so they have to want to do it. But there came a sense from this that they need clear leadership for them to follow. What's your view on that, given your involvement as an advisor in this space?
Sure. So I think if you look at green policy holistically, there are three kind of areas that you need to tick off. And if you focus on the wrong one, which I think the current government has, and I'll come back to that, then you may go a bit wrong. So you have kind of the economic aspect, so what it costs and what the benefit is. Mm. You have the environmental aspect. We often forget, we're like, how much it costs? What are the politics behind it? You're like, there's a reason we're doing this.
Yeah.
And people do want to see, I think, greener, more sustainable lifestyles, businesses, and a country as a whole. And thirdly, I think, unfortunately, because you have some tension with cost and benefit, it becomes quite a political issue.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think the current government has kind of misread the room. I think a lot of people do want to go green, but they feel they need some help. And if you have a leadership team at the very top of the country that says, we clearly don't care about it per se, that's where you come back to. And you can see that, I think, in the U-turn from September of last year with Rishi Sunak. And that was predicated, it's predicated on 475 people. I think that's the right number, which is the number by which the Labour Party lost the Uxbridge and South Ruislip by-election. And because that became treated as a major issue on ULEZ, the expansion of the emission zone in London, I think clutching slightly at straws, obviously not plastic straws, the government decided that their idea was they're going to be the man of the people and freedom for cars and freedom for people away from this green something, as David Cameron famously said. I'm just quoting politics.
Yeah.
I think they've got that wrong. And I think the problem is, if people feel slightly uncertain and the government clearly gives the lead it doesn't care, then this is where you get to.
Yeah. And the thing I think we saw from the research, and again, this goes back, I think, the big difference between big and small businesses. Big businesses, they have processes, they have departments, as you said earlier, that just do it and tell everyone what to do and do the right thing. Small businesses, the majority don't even have someone in the business that nominally looks after sustainability. So it's down for the business leader who's juggling headcount control, supply chain costs, energy bills, all these other things. So sustainability and net zero somewhere on the to-do list. And if they look at someone influential saying, we're putting it all back, then they kind of, some of them think, oh, phew, I can take something off the to-do list.
And particularly if you look at what they've said, which is we're scrapping the 2030 target, but don't worry, we'll still hit 2050. And lots of people are scratching their heads at how that's going to happen. Now, to be honest, there was a problem anyway before this with the 2030 target.
Right.
It would have involved a massive amount of government expenditure, because there's no point everybody having electric cars if there's no charging points.
Yeah.
And you can build charging points all you want, but there's no point building a charging point if you don't have a grid connection. And grid connections currently, because of delays with the national grid, take about 7 years.
Wow.
So the net result of this is we're already going to miss 2030, as it was.
Yeah.
Now, the trouble is the government can't say that, because the thing is, you've been holding the baby for 14 years now. You knew this was coming. Why is it 7 years for a grid connection?
Yeah.
You have people who run the big motorway service stations saying, we've built them, we've built the charging points, but there's no connection. The grid just simply won't connect us. So there is going to be a problem with it. And all these stories leak out, and you're right. You know, if you want an excuse to put something off, like going to the dentist, and somebody says you don't have to go to the dentist this year, you won't go. If somebody says, don't worry, we can do nothing about it for the next few years, power to the driver, etc., but we'll still meet 2050, you know that's not true. But you're being told something that you it's convenient to believe by a figure of authority, and so you tend to go along with it, even though you know it's not right.
And that's really interesting, Steve. But isn't the elephant in the room, whatever your politics, whatever your business size, the whole point of net zero and sustainability is the clock is ticking?
Yes, completely. So it is. I can't think what the verb is. It's possible to catch up. It is possible to catch up. The government will not have the amount of money to do it. So you need to look at some kind of way to create a structure in the UK where private money wants to invest in projects here, wants to create centres of excellence. And all that will hopefully give us something which we don't talk about enough, really, which was energy security. It's no good saying, you know, what a monumental pain in the butt Putin is, and we all say, yes, that is terrible, without saying what we're going to do about moving away from stuff. So if you speak to some experts, even the government's own climate change committee, it is still feasible if we start doing stuff in the next year or two. Otherwise, I don't think we're going to get there. Well, no, that's not right. Let's put it this way. We'll always be able to get somewhere at any particular date, but the cost/pain/benefit analysis changes year on year, and so we really need to start moving very quickly right now.
If you were prime minister for a day, I'm promoting you. Whatever party. This whole theme is about political impact on business confidence in a general election year. If it was you walking into Number 10 next Thursday, and you were thinking about small businesses, and you could wave your magic wand and do anything to help stimulate small business engagement on green, renewable, net zero, the whole piece, what couple of things would be your priorities in terms of what you think, and you know what small businesses think, you are one, but things that would do the most to stimulate engagement from small businesses?
So if you look at energy policy, the problem with it, some of it sounds great, most of it is medium to long term. So short term wins for small businesses. I think the first thing you do, and governments love playing around with this kind of stuff, is 100% capital relief for anything that's deemed to be a renewable investment, capital investment. Same way if you had a car scrappage scheme, have scrappage schemes for various things in the office that you think could be more sustainable. Short term, medium term, there's currently, and they're still sticking with it currently a Labour idea about GB Energy. So a state-run energy company that should be the core investor into a series of energy assets in the UK. It should also perhaps, I think, buy, and it can do that by investing, offering stakes in the UK, buy small shares in portfolios of assets from other sovereign wealth funds, which I think should be amenable. And through that, you'll end up with a company that actually is cash generative within about 3 years. And the aim is to use all that for sustainability. That may well be more business grants or something like that. So get people to think about their tax bill immediately. That's a win. That also delays some of the expenditure for the government. You get private finance involved there. Secondly, say to them within one cycle, energy sustainability and energy security means we will end energy spikes for you.
And that's a very good note to finish, because I think it means the future can be bright. We have a growing level of ambient noise here at our London venue. We are deliberately doing this series out on the road, because that's where small businesses are, out and about. Steve, it's been wonderful to have you on the podcast. Before we go, do you want to share details of your website, both for Emerald and the rather snazzy one you have as you as an energy advisor, which I saw the other day? Do you want to share links on how people can find you if they want to discover more about you and Emerald?
Very simple. I'll keep it short. For a sustainable, ethical insurance company, it's emeraldlife.co.uk. If you want to read some very technical articles on energy regulation and other stuff, stevewardlaw.org.
Yeah. I thought we might have hobby with a capital H, but no.
It's probably two H's at this stage, the way we're going.
Thank you for your time, Steve. Thanks for being part of the podcast.
Thank you very much.